Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We are joined in the studio by Deirdre Malumbi, Dee McGuinness, and oh, there you are, Ali Wright.
Just with 1 second to go.
You are really, wow, that was nerve-shredding stuff. That was
my
well done.
My stomach is in bits.
Well done. I just saw this has nothing to do with Movies and the Booze, but David Hanley, does that name mean anything to you?
Yes, but why does it mean something?
You're the
to
oldest
me,
person yeah. there.
David
Hanley was like, I don't know if the original presenter of Morning Ireland, but back in the day, they just announced he died. It's kind of weird. There's kind of a whole generation never heard of David Hanley, but right. David Hanley was the voice of Morning Ireland for years. Yeah. And he had this, my first gig on the radio was doing It Says in the Papers. And I had to do it, sitting in a studio with David Hanley, of whom I was absolutely terrified because he was this kind of magisterial figure and he had this great gravelly voice. And he had this way of asking questions to ministers and they'd answer and he'd say, "Indeed." Nothing but contempt for their answer. But weirdly enough, I do It Says in the Papers, it's all war, famine, politicians round with each other. And, you know, you'd usually put in some sort of lighthearted story at the end. And then he'd start giggling like a schoolchild. And he'd say, "Oh, you're going to have to warn me if you do that again." But anyway, that's apropos of nothing. He died. Rest in peace, David.
Oh, we should be extra grumpy today.
He was absolutely fabulous broadcaster. Anyway, tell us what beers we're talking about today, Dee.
We are looking at doubles and triples, so two Belgian beers. We have Augustine Grand Cru, which is a Belgian triple, and Bornham Double, which is a Belgian double. And we are looking at the difference between the two styles and also the difference between Cluster beers, Abbey beers and Trappist beers.
Okay, right. That's a lot of complicated information you're going to be hitting
with
there.
It is, especially seeing as the first one is 9% and the second one is 8%.
Oh, mother of God. Right,
I'm relying on them to trigger my memory.
Okay. And probably won't. I hope there's no difficult words I have to pronounce over the next hour. And the two movies, well, Wicked, is Wicked a bit Bovril-y in the sense that if you're prepared to commit another 2.5 hours of your life, then you'll probably like it?
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, I mean, there's a huge number of, Wicked fans out there and, they're great movies for families and everything, And it's a magical kind of fantastical world to get lost in. It's old school Hollywood movie magic and all of that, so... Yeah, it's got a lot going for it. But at the same time...
I can feel the excitement in your voice, Deirdre.
But at the same time, this sequel, Wicked for Good, it's based on an hour's worth of material that has been extended into 2 hours and 15 minutes. And I'll get into the negative aspects of that, I suppose.
Right, okay, yeah. And Jay Kelly, is George Clooney looking for an Oscar?
I suppose he is, but also he's just kind of doing one of these, he's really into those introspective kind of roles, So he plays like a kind of Hollywood actor who's at like the tail end of his career and kind of looking back and reflecting on it now, I suppose. And it's another one, and I know we've had quite a few of these this year. It's another one of those Netflix movies that's going to be out in cinemas for just a week or two and then it's going to Netflix. So I still don't understand their plan with all of this.
Oscar, of course.
It's a weird
one.
Yeah. It's the whole Oscars thing. But the only one I've seen that I would be like, no, you absolutely need to see this on the big screen so far this year has been Frankenstein, which I'm glad to see has had a lot of online love. So I don't feel like the only strange person to have enjoyed that movie.
Okay. Kelly seems to have a very good cast.
It has great cast, yeah. It has Noah Baumbach behind it. He would have gotten an Oscar nomination for Marriage Story. So there's a good cast and crew to speak of.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's Charlie XCX's real name? Is it sort of Mary Smith or something dull like that?
I don't know. This really
it's just
good.
I don't want to have to say Charlie XCX after I've had a sip of the
name
double McTrouble that your man has over
Charlie,
there.
Charlie, for sure.
Yeah.
So I think her real name is Charlotte Emma Atkinson.
oh my God, she's super posh.
Yeah, that is actually quite posh. But that doesn't fit her, you know, the vibe
brand,
that she's giving
no.
out. So Charlie XCX is more like, ooh, who's this?
Yeah, she's good. And she's playing, she's doing a Spinal Tap kind of job.
This is very weird. It's really hard to explain. So basically, it's been announced that Charlie XCX is playing herself, in inverted commas, in a mockumentary called The Moment. So there's been a huge trend the last like 2 years, especially with the likes of Taylor Swift, who they are like feuding at the moment, technically, where they're releasing these concert movies, which in fairness are like box office hits and they're selling out. She's almost making fun of it, it sounds like, but it's based on someone basically about her that is her. So it is technically about her. It's about the absurdity of pop stardom. So for me, it really feels like this might be a slight hit on Taylor Swift because Taylor is very much leaned into this. But it's saying that it's satirical and that it is kind of Spinal Tap style, but that it blends real world Charlie with a fictional chaos. So the trailer has been released if anybody wants to go and look at it and see what it's like. So there's like, the footage looks like it's really at her on her tour, and it does look like it's all based on her tour. So I've just so many questions about it. I feel like there's a lot of celebrities recently have tried to do things a little bit differently. Like, for example, like, remember Robbie Williams with the Better Man biopic?
Yeah, sure.
Instead of just doing a biopic about himself, he's like, let's turn me into a monkey. So I don't know if it's one of those things, because obviously J-Lo came out and did a real documentary and that just absolutely bombed, and she just got slammed for how terrible it was. So I don't know if she's trying to be, because she's known as being this cool brat type of character, does she think maybe it's cool to do this? I also feel like she is poking fun though at Taylor Swift. Like, she was on SNL a few weeks ago because Taylor Swift has a new song on her album that was basically about her and Charlie XCX, and Charlie XCX kind of played up to it in those scenes. So she's done a little bit of acting and stuff through SNL. Very strange, but like, she is kind of the moment, and like, she obviously was on the Barbie soundtrack, her Brat album was huge, she's also on the Wuthering Heights soundtrack, which is about to come out. It looks like she has every song on the Wuthering Heights soundtrack from what I've seen.
Okay.
And so she's written like a full score for it basically, which is insane. Like, that movie's going to be massive. So maybe someone somewhere is like, right, what do celebs do in their huge, let's do a documentary, and she probably was like, that's cringe, so let's do a mockumentary. So people are pitching it as like The Office meets maybe one of Katy Perry's documentaries, but I don't see how it's going to work personally. I think maybe because there's going to be a lot of chaos that happens in it, like, she's kind of known for her wild party lifestyle, maybe that's why it's not meant to be real, because she's saying it's completely fictional. So maybe we'll see a bit of raves and stuff like that in it, or drug use that, you know,
maybe she's kind of going to be revealed to be somebody completely different, and that's the fake bit of it.
Maybe, but you know what? She's very good at the intrigue, because people are all talking about it now. It's all online. When she released this new album, the Brat album, like, she kept releasing like 3 second clips of songs. She kind of started that. It's really big on TikTok now. So I think she knows what she's doing. So I trust that she knows what she's doing. I just don't know. Do I love celebrities and documentaries? They're all the same, but they are normally poor me and life's so hard and I'm rich and thin and so difficult.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Maybe she was like, I can't do this. So they were like, well, what can you do? I'm interested to see what it's going to look like. It'll probably do well. People are rushing to the cinemas to see artists in these sorts of shows. And even, I actually never saw Robbie's one, but like, I heard really good things about it. So I'm sure regardless, it will do well.
Yeah. Do you know the old feud? Is that all? Do you believe that?
Well, in Taylor's new album, this is what I love about Taylor. Like, she's always saying that like, it's so hard for her and women are always against women. It's so difficult. But yet she pens these songs where they're very clearly about other women as well as guys. But her ex is her fiance's best friend. They're married now, actually. Sorry, her husband. They're in the same band in 1975, and the lyrics are about her partner being in the band and that they're backstage and she didn't want her around. There's literally nobody else it could be about. But you know, Taylor's always like, oh, it's up to the fans, you know, there's just Easter eggs there. But then people are like slaughtering these people online.
Oh, I know,
and
that's quite
crazy.
Deliberate. But what I mean is, like, does she really dislike Charlie XCX, or is this like her agent was in touch with Charlie's agent and they've, you know, organised a feud for 3 weeks' time, you know?
That's a fair point, because her and Katy Perry, so that song Bad Blood was about Katy Perry stealing, in inverted commas, all of Taylor Swift's dancers on one of the tours. Yeah.
Why is Taylor Swift so
always
popular,
in a feud?
Given she seems to hate so many people.
Because she's just the ultimate victim. There's definitely going to be texts coming in from Swift fans there. They're going to go against
me. She's a billionaire.
But it's like, everyone's against me. It's so hard. And then everyone's like, Taylor, we love you. And then people like Katie are slamming. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal to this day has his Instagram comments turned off still because of her album Red. Like, the songs that are on it are just so, people were so sorry for her. But Katy Perry and her, anyway, they ended up actually reconciliating, and like, there was a photo of a bunch of roses sent to a gig. So, you know what? Maybe you're right. Her team, like, Taylor's team is the ultimate PR team I've ever witnessed. Like, they've even emailed my team asking to change sentences on articles. So they watch everything. Everything that she does, there's a plan. So maybe you're right. Maybe she'll be in the movie and it will all be revealed.
They've never emailed this show.
We'll double check that. You never know. Check to your researchers.
Spike-filled billionaire who hates everyone. Or is it all fake? Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping. Who comes up with the titles?
I know. Oh, my God. I'm actually excited for this, though, because I liked the Hunger Games franchise, so I'm glad it's coming back. So Lionsgate have released it, the very first trailer. Again, it's online if anyone wants to look it up. The name is a mouthful, I won't remember it. I'm just going to call it the new Hunger Games movie. But yeah, it's giving fans a proper look at a young Haymitch Abernathy. So this time played by Tom Blythe, but originally played by, Woody Harrelson, exactly. He was a really popular character in the series, so slightly a risk maybe, but he's a really liked character in it, so people are thinking that this is going to be a really good one for the fans. So it's a prequel, and it is based on the Suzanne Connell's 2025 novel. So it takes place during the second quarter quell, for any of the Hunger Games fans out there. So this is a Hunger Games event that Haymitch won. So in the later movies, he's like this famous, iconic, legendary winner of the Hunger Games. So this is now him actually going through it. And then, you know, he's obviously a very troubled character in the movie, so it kind of explains why. It's 24 years before Katniss Everdeen enters the arena, so we're not going to see her in this.
Yeah.
But there's like a big twist in the actual games. It's a slightly darker version of the games. It is said to have been the most cruel version of the games.
Why is it? The other ones were knockabout fun, were they?
It's reminding me of The Running Man now that you were talking about the other day. It's kind of similar. But apparently it has the most shocking twist out of all of the franchises to date. And that fans are now saying this is going to be the darkest one. So I don't know, are they doing this on the back of the likes of Squid Game being so popular that they're like, let's go back to a really dark one now. But I'm sure it's going to be a hit. I mean, the originals did so well. And the fact that they're saying there's loads of twists in this and it's going to be really, really dark, I think it's going to be a good one.
Okay. Well, given that they can't, the whole thing can't come tumbling down. You know that because this is a prequel, so they have to come up with some other plot devices.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm sure loads of people will die, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Right, so, Dean, hang on to your semblance of sobriety there.
Yes, so the first one, Augustine.
Deirdre Malumbi pretending to be pregnant. So
she fakes it so well.
Yes.
So, Augustine Triple. So this is a Belgian triple. And there are kind of two parts to the name of the style. Sometimes it's called Belgian triple, Abbey triple, Trappist triple. And the second part of it, the Trappist Abbey or Klooster beer part of it, is more to do with where it's coming from and what the philosophy is behind the beer than the style of the beer itself. So if it's an Abbey beer, which is what the second of the two beers that we'll be tasting today is, what happens is the brewery links up with an Abbey and they pay a percentage of profits or a percentage of revenue to the Abbey as a contribution for the use of the Abbey's name.
Okay, so they don't, it has nothing to do with the Abbey. The monks themselves aren't making this.
With an Abbey beer, no. With a Trappist beer, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So they're very strict with a Trappist beer, and there's the International Trappist Association that has registered a Trappist as a name. And if it's a Trappist beer, the beer has to be brewed on the site of a Trappist monastery. The control of the brewery needs to be under the control of monasteries, of monks, of the Cistercian in order of the strict observance. That's definitely one you get out.
Is that what they call it?
Yes,
they're ninjas, aren't they?
It's actually very cool to visit. I've been to a couple of Trappist monasteries, and it literally feels like walking into a different world. And for one, I was there overnight with my wife. I was having a chat with them and saying, you do know that the person that's coming with me is my wife. You know, we don't need two rooms. And they were like, yeah. You know, we were brought in and we were sleeping in the monastery. And they said, right, this is your cell. And then they brought my wife down to the next room and said, this is your cell. So we were given two separate rooms. And I kind of thought afterwards and I said, yeah, if they did have a double bed, you'd be asking questions.
Yeah, good point. Plus, also, it doesn't sound like the sort of place where you're going to be in the mood much anyway. Yeah.
But we were there for a kind of a day and a night. And when I left, it felt like I'd been on a holiday for about a week, because it is a completely different experience. We're there. They spend 8 hours in prayer, 8 hours working, and 8 hours sleeping. So they have a structured day. It's a silent order. They do speak, but it's a silent order insofar as they kind of spend a lot of their time in silence. But that's with the Trappist. With the Abbeys, what you've got is there's a contribution towards the Abbey. And then what you have is you have breweries that are brewing beers to the styles that are often brewed by Abbey breweries or by Trappist breweries. But if they were to call it an Abbey double or an Abbey triple then and not contribute to an Abbey, then that would be unfair on the Abbey beers.
Okay.
So that's where the Cloister beer comes in, a Cloister beer. So it is a beer that is brewed to the type of style that Abbey breweries or Trappist breweries brew, but is not connected with an Abbey.
Okay. So it's kind of like a licensing agreement.
Very much so. Like Leffe is probably the best known of the Abbey beers, and that's owned by AB InBev, and it's a global brand, and have no idea how much they give to the Abbey. I imagine that the percentage might be smaller because the volumes are larger. So this is a triple, and with Belgian styles, Michael Jackson, the beer hunter, the not singing Michael Jackson, wrote a book which was kind of the classic book defining Belgian beer styles. It's out of print now, so if you have a copy, hold on to it because the price of it has gone through the roof since he died. But he went around and tried to put Belgian beers into categories just so that people could understand what to expect from each beer. And Belgian triple, Belgian double were two of the categories that he came up with. But the Belgians have a kind of a quirk to their personality where as soon as you try to tell them that they fit into a category, that they try to work out a way of either creating another category or doing something so that when they're in that category that theirs is completely different from everybody else's.
Yeah.
So when I say that all triples are golden, all triples are golden except for the ones that aren't golden. there are a couple of breweries that are doing dark triples, but for the most part they're golden beers. And when you've got a golden beer, when it's an ale, the fruit flavour tends to follow the colour. So you tend to get pale fruit flavours. So with this, you're getting kind of peach, apple, pear, softer fruit flavours. Some lovely Belgian spice. It's quite a sweet beer. You get Belgian candy sugar flavour, which is quite a distinct type of sweetness. And some phenolic flavours in there. It's really banging of the red clove drop sweets, the ones with the hard-boiled sweets, a lot of clove in it, and white pepper spice. But absolutely lovely beer. It's 9%. It does give you a kind of a warming sensation as it
does.
Goes down.
Yeah.
You kind of notice
the thing
that.
Is, but a sip of that, and you wouldn't think it was 9%.
No,
that's the dangerous thing about it.
Incredibly well disguised. Now, the funny thing I find is that my rate of drink has to do with the volume of flavour. So there's a huge amount of flavour in this. And now, me being a total nerd, I drink it and then try to break it down into every nth degree of flavour into it. And that slows me down in terms of drinking it. But in general, it is a sipping beer. I think that if you've got a beer that's kind of 4% with no flavour in it whatsoever, you're onto your second pint before you even realise that you finished
thirsty.
The first one. Whereas with this, very much a sipping beer. But different from the double that would be tasting afterwards, a darker beer, more malt character to it. There was a certain amount of malt character in this, but more to do with the pale fruits and the Belgian spices.
It's lovely. Graham says, I love a Belgian double, but do they have to be so hefty? Like, is there any such thing as a single? That'd be perfect.
There is a style called, it's sometimes called a Belgian single, but it's more popularly known as a Patter's beer. And that is the beer that is brewed so that the monks can function for the 8 hours that they're working during the day.
And they might get a bit chatty if they have a double.
Chimay Gold is an example of a Patter's beer, 4.8%. And it is an absolutely beautiful beer. It's very complex, but very light flavoured. It's got loads and loads of flavour in it, but the flavours are quite subtle and delicate.
Okay. I love Leffe beers, but are they weakened for the Irish market? Few two lefes in Belgium and you'll be singing and dancing before collapsing.
It depends on which one you have. The Lefe Blonde, I think, is around 6.5%, but there are other versions of Lefe that are available. With the large breweries, they tend to limit the number of beers. Where it's a smaller market, they just decide, oh yeah, that market deserves to have one of our beers, you know, whereas if you're in a market where there's more interest in the beer or there's a bigger population, you could have kind of 3, 4, 5, 6 different variations on the beer. So there is other versions of Lefe, but the beer that would be stronger would be a different beer.
Yes, okay. You know, but we're probably not getting the range of different Lefes in this country.
Tends not to be. It tends to be about one of them at most in Ireland, just the 6.5.
Steve in Clare says, I'm currently obsessed with Bravia 8.6% Intense Blonde. That's you, Ali, in Intense Blonde. few of those and you'll know all about it, he says. 8.6% Intense Blonde.
Yeah, what brand did...
Bravia, he's calling it. B-R-A-V-I-A.
Okay. There was a thing in Ireland where they kind of stayed away from lagers up around that level. In the I know that you spent a bit of time in the UK and that there was a whole category of beer that was the only purpose of the beer, things like Tennent's Super and Carlsberg Special Brew. And the only purpose of the beer was that it was a heavy alcohol delivery system. It was like high strength and thing, and the only people that were drinking it. And that type of mainstream beer at high strength never really came into Ireland. The high strength beers tend to be the kind of premium beers. And what I find funny enough is that a lot of the two beers that we're drinking today are in 750ml bottles. And a lot of the people that drink them tend to be drinking them as an alternative to a wine.
Yes,
So they're drinking something at kind of, you know, 10 to 14% and then coming back to an 8% as opposed to, or coming back to a 9% as opposed to coming from a 4% up to an 8 or 9%, that it tends to fit into that category. And it is 750ml sizes. It's not the type of beer you drink by the neck.
Indeed. Right, Dee, what movie would you like to do first?
Well, we start with Wicked for Good.
Okay, Wicked for Good coming up after this.
Wouldn't be happier.
It's more important than ever that you lift everyone's spirits, as only you can.
Does that do what I think it does?
No!
No way! I'm obsessulated.
The wand really sells it.
Because happy is what happens.
Linda, the girl!
There you go. That's Wicked for Good. It starts in cinemas today, I think. It's Wicked colon for Good.
Yes.
Is the colon important? Well, a colon generally is important, but... in terms of the film, is it important?
Well, I suppose it's called For Good because, you know, and even in the musical itself, the whole idea for good is that it means both for good, for being a good person, but also for good, forever. You know,
it's got layers, man.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, the big number from this half of the show, I think people will always associate with For Good, which is what Elphaba and Glinda sing together. And it's all about, you know, solidifying their female friendship, which is ultimately what the Wicked movies are about. And it's interesting because before the break, obviously, we were talking about, you know, this whole feud between like pop stars thing and the fact that the Wicked series, and I call it a series, even though it should just be a standalone. But anyway, the fact that the Wicked series is about like two girlfriends who just absolutely adore each other and just see the good in one another and just want to bring each other up. There is something very kind of sweet and touching about that, which I think is why, you know, these movies have proven such a success. Well, we'll see with this one, but it's obviously going to be huge.
Now, didn't they film the whole thing together anyway? And this is just part two.
Yeah, really? I think so. Yeah, and like I said before the break, the second half of the Wicked stage show, which is what this is based on, is only an hour long, and it's been extended out into 2 hours, 15 minutes here. I thought it really did drag in parts. And for me, I've actually only seen the Wicked stage show once, but for me, all of the...
I'm shocked. I've seen it 5 times.
She's pregnant.
But even having only seen it once, all the bits that they added in, like stuck out like a sore thumb for me because they were completely unnecessary. They didn't add anything to the story. And in fact, it often like stalled the story. It just kind of kept the story in its same place instead of kind of progressing it forward. And I found that really quite irritating. They do add a couple of new numbers. They obviously give one new one to Cynthia Erivo and one new one to Ariana Grande. And I think it's particularly nice for Ariana Grande's character, Glinda, to get a solo song because otherwise she wouldn't have one in the second half. So that was nice, but I still don't think that they hold a candle to like the original big numbers, which would include like As Long As Your Mind, For Good, which I mentioned before, and No Good Deed, which Cynthia Erivo is like it's chillingly good. That number. Like, okay. She is such a fantastic, fantastic actress. And I mean, I adore them both in these movies. Like, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, for all the criticism that that original casting got, they have absolutely proven the critics wrong. They are both so, so good in this. And especially in this film. And one thing I did appreciate was that they wrote in more scenes where they actually, like, share the screen together. And their chemistry is just so good, whether they're, like, kind of, you know, giving each other all these compliments or whether they're, like, fighting with one another, you know, tugging at each other's hair. They're just such a delight to watch on the screen. And then when they sing, like, oh, it takes your breath away, you know. Does
is the ending different? From the stage showing?
No, it's not different. Like I said, the main difference is that there's a bunch of stuff added that's really just not necessary.
So
I found that quite annoying because it could have just been the one movie. It really could have just been the one
but
movie.
But it sounds like if you're a fan of this,
you
kind of won't care. And it's kind of very much fan servicing and you're going for the feels rather than what's going to happen at the end of this?
Absolutely. Like when I left the premiere earlier this week, and Ali was actually at the premiere as well, there were people crying, which I thought, oh, no, that's a bit much, lad.
But I cried at the first premiere. Yeah. I cried at that one. Yeah.
So it obviously does kind of strike that emotional chord in a lot of people, you know, this story. And it is like, you know, fantastic world building, like the fact that it's so set heavy as opposed to kind of all this like cringy CGI and stuff. I do think that that makes a big difference in terms of like you can watch this movie and really kind of get lost in it and picture yourself in Oz, you know, among all of these characters and everything. So it's fun as a fantasy. It's good for families. Love the music. The characters are really adorable. There's a lot going for it. So you can see why it's going to be huge. And it's obviously coming up to Christmas. So I wouldn't be surprised if people go see it again and again either. It also kind of, and I don't think it necessarily suffers from this. I still think the first movie is stronger, but what you often get with these franchises is as you go along with the sequels that they do get darker and darker as like the stakes are kind of raised for the characters. So you think of something like Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, compared to like the sequels, it just gets darker and darker. And similarly with this, you know, when we land in Oz again at the start of this movie, all these characters are in a much more kind of, I suppose, dangerous place than they would have been originally. And that kind of raises the stakes. But it also takes a little bit of that feel good innocence factor that I suppose the first Wicked would have had. But at the same time, I still think this movie is going to be a monster hit. And from what I've seen of like reviews so far, it's like the fans love it. The critics are like, these are the issues with it.
Yeah.
I don't think audiences are really going to care one way or the other.
They'll leave go with it. Should bring their daughters though, because it is that friendship element. It is so emotional to watch it, and it's so rare to see a film like that. And the performances too. In fairness to Ariana, she's the one who made everybody sing live, and you can tell that they are like in that moment, and it is like extra emotional. But yeah, For Good, I feel like it's just the ultimate like best friend number, isn't it? It's just that's when loads of people started crying. So if there's anyone listening who's thinking of maybe bringing their daughters, that's I think a perfect movie for like a young girl to watch.
But I think the only reason people don't sing along with the Cynthia Erivo songs is because she's so good
and she hits
the notes so hard, you're like, what's the point?
Oh, No Good Deed was amazing. No one like said a word in the premiere. You could literally like everyone was in complete silence. It was incredible.
It was a great atmosphere, you know, and there were loads of kind of you know, parents bringing their kids to it, and
people
everything
dressed up as her and everything.
They dressed
was so
up,
cute
we'll get a lot of people dressing up, I'd imagine, in like the pink and green, a bit like, you know, what it was like for Barbie. So
yeah,
it is
definitely
lovely.
Yeah.
The Well, what do you dress up as if you're going to go and see Wicked?
So in the first movie, a lot of people wore pink or green because Ariana's character Glinda wore a lot of pink in it. So like a pink dress. A lot of people wore blue dresses this time, this part, this half, it's all in blue. But for Elphaba, the Wicked Witch, everyone wears green. So I wore a green dress. So there was a lot of green and pink at it. People had wands at it as well because Glinda's character has a wand, obviously. So no, everyone really dressed up for this time. I was really good to see that. And the first time too as well, to be fair. And they actually had the hat that Elphaba was wearing in the movie there. Did you see that?
Yeah,
at
like the premiere. Tiara was
and the
so
wand
cool.
And the tiaras and everything. So it's a real like experiential thing. And like, I am such a fan of Wicked. Anyone who is a fan, you will love it. The songs also stuck out to me though, because I was like, what is this? When you know the show so well, but I still loved it. And like, the Defying Gravity, like, is probably one of the best songs ever written. So, like, absolutely. Together, it is nice. I actually saw a few people, and what's going to happen here, are going for these binge days in some screenings where you can see the first half and the second half and spend 6 hours
Whoa.
In the cinema.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, anything that brings people back to the cinema, I'm all for it. You know, even if there is criticism, people are loving it. So I'm like, just go for it.
What age group? Someone here says they have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old.
I'd say it's fine
PG.
For them.
It is PG. Yeah. So like my sister's actually gone to see it today with her 1-year-old daughter. There's like a baby kind of cinema thing you can go to. Mm. And she'd asked me, is there anything really dark in it? And I was like, no, like what you said, it's visually a little bit darker. And there's like a scene where there's caged animals, which is a little bit upsetting. But I don't think that age group would suffer, the 6 or 8-year-olds, because it all ends well.
Yeah. You know? Okay. That'd be a bit of jeopardy in it. Yeah. Bit of hate coming in. I won't read it there because...
Don't want to cry.
Ali's close enough for cheers as it is.
For the actual Wicked movies or?
For Wicked. Some people don't like Wicked. They just think it's
That's
not very
surprising.
Good.
Oh my gosh.
They're saying harsh things.
Wow. I'm not able for today.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
Was offered James.
So
that's bizarre. Were they on crack at the time?
So funny. So he revealed that in 1968, he was approached to play Bond right after Sean Connery. So he was meant to basically take over from Sean Connery. Turned it down because he said his American accent was so thick that he wouldn't be able to do a British accent again. And you might remember, and he turns 100 next month, which is iconic on its own. So he had just done Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, by the way, at the time when he was asked to replace him. But in an interview recently, he said, he told the Bond producers, have you not heard my British accent? And the fact that his Cockney accent in Mary Poppins is widely considered to be the worst
of all time.
Of all time. He said himself that it was once called the most atrocious Cockney accent in the history of cinema. Hmm. Now, I have a few troubling issues with the accents in P.S. I Love You, but that's another story. In press since now, he's basically said that he blamed that his Mary Poppins accent to an Irish dialect coach. That's who caused those issues, apparently.
Oh, gosh. Deliberately sabotaged it.
But it's an interesting time to be talking about it because obviously Amazon MGM is taking over the Bond franchise. There's a lot of conversations about who is actually going to...
They're taking their time.
Taking their time, and it's starting production in 2026 because it's meant to be out in 2028. But I found this interview so funny because Austin Butler, who's kind of like, you know, the toast of Tinseltown at the moment, he's on the cover of the new Variety Boys Are Back in Town Hollywood cover. I think he'd be an amazing Bond, but he actually said in an interview that the accent is a problem. So it's obviously believed within Hollywood that somebody British or Irish, because obviously we had Pierce before, should play the character. So Cillian Murphy was like...
Pierce can't do an Irish accent. Well, that's his main problem there.
He was such a good Bond. But we have other people at the moment. Callum Turner, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Theo James, Jacob Elordi, your favourite from Frankenstein, Harris Dickinson. Some of these are all in the Beatles movie, if not all of them. A few years ago, Idris Elba, Cillian Murphy. I actually asked Cillian about this himself and he was just like... Like, kind of laughing
about it. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
He was like, no. And actually, him and Pierce were on the same red carpet at an Oscar party. And Pierce was just like, Cillian would be amazing. But like, he gets asked so often who should take him over. But I'm hoping it's going to be soon because there's also a lot of predictions of who's going to be the Bond girl. Sydney Sweeney, our favorite girl, is very good friends with Jeff Bezos, who's obviously making all these decisions. So she's tipped, Kendall Jenner's tipped. So there's so much conversation that I would say early new year, we're going to have some sort of news. But a lot of people have like pulled out, they've like ruled themselves out. It's all very strange. I don't think people are that happy that Amazon are doing it.
Yeah, so. I think that's the thing. I think Colin Farrell would make a great Bond.
Wouldn't
He'd
he
bring a great bit of grit to
Bond.
It. But he's probably, a lot of actors probably go, I don't want to be stuck as Bond for the next 10 years and...
Daniel Craig didn't make it sound very appealing, to be honest.
I hated him. He was my worst. I loved Pierce. I loved Roger Moore. Like, I grew up watching Bond and I was obsessed with it and I thought Daniel was so annoying. And all I did was complain about it all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, we do have to take a break. Dean, tell us about the next beer, please.
Okay, so next beer is Bornham Double, 8% ABV, and this is a double. So key difference between double and triple is the colour. So it's kind of a red-brown colour, and then that colour bleeds into the head, so you get a kind of a tan-coloured head in the beer. Now, that colour comes from the type of malt that is used in the beer. So when they make malt for pale-coloured beers, what they do is they dry the malt in a very gentle way. For mid-coloured beers, what they'll do is during the malting process, while the malt is still wet, they'll heat it up, and you can get a crystallising effect with the malt. And effectively, what you've got is kind of darker sugars developing in the malt in the malting process, and that follows through then into the flavours. So you get flavours like brown sugar, burnt sugar, toffee, caramel. With this as well, though, what you have is some roast flavour in it, and that's coming through as like really good plain chocolate, high cocoa content plain chocolate. What I actually found with it is if you're making something with plain chocolate and you grate it into small pieces, that seems to kind of accentuate the flavour of the cocoa in the chocolate. Mm. So when we were tasting this, the second thing then for the ale fermentation, the fruit flavours in the beer tend to follow the colour of the beer. So you tend to get darker fruit flavours. So there's a certain amount of plum in this, a little bit strong. Which is slightly lighter.
And the ABV on this is
8%.
8%.
8%.
Mother of God. I'm stuck for time, so we do have to move on to our second movie. It's Jay Kelly. Here's a clip.
Jay Kelly. Jay Kelly. Jay. Kelly.
And action.
Jay Kelly.
Jay Kelly is a hero of cinema.
Jay Kelly.
What do you say to people who say you only play yourself?
I think what you do is magic.
You know how difficult it is to be yourself? You try it.
You make movies. That's what the world wants from you.
Is that Jay Kelly?
You're never alone.
Really?
I think I'm always alone.
Right. Okay, so they really pummeled the name there in that particular clip. So is this rich, famous, skinny, feeling sorry for myself kind of job?
It kind of is, to be honest.
Oh my God, it's a Taylor Swift documentary.
There we go again. Yeah.
There we go. So George Clooney, he plays Jay Kelly, a Hollywood star who's going through something of a crisis and decides to follow his daughter on a trip across Europe, which obviously she loves not. And his publicity team is basically following along for the ride. It's kind of, I suppose you could describe it as character study. It's like, you know, part comedy, part drama. It's got a terrific cast aside from Clooney, who's, you know, flawless as ever. He's, you know, suave, he's debonair, but has those, you know, insecurities that often surface. You've got Adam Sandler as the second lead. He plays his very loyal manager slash friend. Laura Dern plays the publicist. You've got Billy Crudup in there, Riley Keough, Patrick Wilson, Isla Fisher, and Irish actress Eve Hewson pops up as well as the one who got away. All for like
from kind whom? Of, from George Clooney.
Yes. Yeah. But in flashbacks.
Okay. I'm going to be judgy, but there's a bit of
flashbacks.
All right, okay, from a young George Clooney.
The whole idea is that his character is kind of looking back on his life. We see it all through flashbacks and kind of the roads not taken and how he ultimately came to be the actor that he is.
Does somebody else play the young George Clooney? Or is it George Clooney? All right,
it is not,
ultimate
not CGI.
Fantasy. Yeah.
George Clooney, so don't worry about all that. Look, it's a nice movie. It's enjoyable enough. It's zippy. It's dominated by that like sharp, chatty dialogue, which I suppose Noah Baumbach is very responsible for. Like he'd be known for kind of writing quite a lot of screenplays. Like he worked with Greta Gerwig on like Barbie and Frances Ha. He would have worked with Wes Anderson on The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou and Fantastic Mr. Fox. So, yeah, he's known for doing these kind of like zippy, witty types of movies when it comes to like the screenplay. So, yeah, it's a nice enough movie. But it's funny you mentioned that, Sean, because that was one of the things that really irked me about the movie as well, is that this guy is feeling so sorry for himself that there's no room for me to feel particularly sorry for him. Like, there's no need for it. And I was also kind of watching this movie, and I suppose maybe it's because of the whole like roads not taken theme to it. But I was watching it kind of wishing it had gone maybe in a more like adventurous direction. Like there are these scenes between Clooney and Crudup at the very start. Billy Crudup basically plays his former kind of acting like colleague. They would have gone to acting school together and stuff. And there's some great scenes at the start where they like have these exchanges in a bar. And I would have loved to see how that movie would have went, but instead they kind of did the predictable like road trip midlife crisis kind of thing. So I feel like there was a better movie in there, but at that it was grandeur. Now I will mention that
and the Oscar for grand.
It will have only a limited cinema release and then it'll be on Netflix.
Right, there you go. So you can watch it when you've got a hangover and your critical facilities are reduced somewhat. Thanks to Ali, Dean and Deirdre.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.